And welcome back to Coast with Jason Jurel, our special guest, as we talk about the Giants, ages of the Giants. And we'll take your calls when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Jason Jurel with us. Jason, where do we get your book, Ages of the Giants?
Well, right now it's available at lulu.com. That's LULU.com. And within a few weeks, it should also be available through several other distributors.
Oh, great. And you've got sequels coming?
That's right. This is just the first publication from a research project that's going on 10 years old. So there are going to be several more books planned, and we're working really hard on trying to get some more of that information out to cover more of these unique people from around the world and their very interesting cultures and histories.
Did you ever think that you would be investigating giants years ago?
Well, you know, I've always studied subjects like this, but it has really been a surprise for life to take this turn, especially with all the archaeology that I've had to study and learn about just to pursue this. I would really recommend that anyone out there who's listening, if you have a passion and an interest in some subject from the ancient world or anything else, you should really invest the time in educating yourself and finding it within yourself to make a contribution.
Let's take some calls here for you, Jason, as they line up for you. We'll go to Donna in North Carolina to get things started. Hello, Donna.
Hi, George. Happy Dark Side of the Full Blood Moon.
It's starting soon.
Yeah. Jason, my question is, why would anyone want to keep the fact that there were giants hidden?
Okay. In order to understand what happened to the Tall Ones, we have to put it in the context of when it happened and who committed the act. And what we found was that all of the major archaeological institutions acknowledged these discoveries well into the 1900s. But then in 1910, something very important happened, and that something was a man named Elias Herlitzka became the curator of anthropology at the National Museum, the Smithsonian. And Elias Herlitzka was a lifelong proponent of eugenics. Now, if you're not familiar with the subject of eugenics, I would advise you to read a book called War Against the Weak by author, the last name of Black. This movement completely took over anthropology and politics in the United States and Europe in the early 20th century. And one of the goals of eugenics was to categorize all the races of mankind into a type of racial hierarchy, and to then attempt to wipe out lesser races through various social programs, and they had targeted Native Americans for extinction. And there are several researchers and scholars, including my colleague Ross Hamilton, who believe that Herlitzka probably instituted the policy of denial at the Smithsonian as a way of keeping the ancestry and the presence of these anthropologically superior people in the ancestry of Native Americans from becoming widely known, because they wanted to justify their policies against the Native Americans. And Herlitzka actually was the first real giants denier from the Smithsonian. He attacked people in interviews who would ask about the skeletal remains that the Smithsonian had found and put on record, and he could scarcely file a report without attacking the idea that the Tall Ones existed.
These critics of the Tall Ones, do they have much grounds to stand on?
Well, the skeptics, you know, one thing that really helps the skeptic is a lot of us are sort of limited in our resources. You know, the skeptic, oftentimes they're partnered with archaeologists. They have access to more information than most of the amateur researchers. And really what gives them ground to stand on is when we don't do our homework properly. People who write about this subject need to follow every lead through to make sure that something we're describing was actually found. I know in our book we actually debunk several newspaper reports of giants that have been reprinted over the years because the actual excavation reports revealed that the skeletons were only of average height. You know, the professional skeptic can take something like that and run a touchdown with it.
True. Keith in Kansas City, Missouri. Go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, hi, George. First-time caller and Coast Insider.
Great. Thank you.
Question for your guest. What does he think the difference is between the Nephilim giants and his giants, the tall ones? And then a comment on the Nephilim. Do you think that the Nephilim, being the offspring of the sons of God, daughters of men, they were in essence a manifestation of mules, like human mules? In other words, they couldn't reproduce. The Nephilim could reproduce, and that's why we don't see a modern manifestation of these creatures today.
Well, that's very interesting. I really appreciate that comment. As I've said before, my job is to present the information and allow the reader or the audience to draw their own conclusions, so I don't want to sound like I'm being dogmatic. I'm just stating that my opinion is that the tall ones in North America are not the Nephilim, and they certainly did reproduce. We've even found family tombs where a very large skeleton, 7 feet in height, would be found with the other members of their family. Also, another reason why I do not believe that these are the Nephilim is one of the aspects of our new research involves DNA studies, and there's nothing irregular in the DNA of these people, and we've actually managed to connect them with living Native Americans. So whatever the truth of the Nephilim may be, it's simply my opinion that these are not them. That being said, it's perfectly fine if someone does believe that. Like I said, my purpose is to present the information for people to form their own conclusions.
Could you describe, Jason, what they looked like in terms of, you know, hair color and things like that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. We've worked with a remarkable artist named Marcia K. Moore to reconstruct the appearance of these ancient people. And for her work, Marcia actually used actual skulls found in burial mounds in the Ohio Valley. And you can see her reconstructions of the living Adena and Hopewell people on our website and also on her website, marciakmoore.com. And it's very remarkable work. They're very powerfully built people with pronounced facial features. And, I'd recommend people check out that imagery.
Let's go to Doug in Keyport, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Hey, Doug, go ahead.
Yes, hi, good evening. How are you?
Great, Doug, thank you.
Fantastic. I've got a question for both of you. George, I have to ask you right off the bat, when are you coming out to the East Coast? We keep hearing about these performances, and you winded up singing. I'm hoping one night you will at least, there's got to be 100,000 of us that would be lining up just to hear you sing. Can maybe one night on your bumper music, you could throw in a tape of you doing one of your numbers.
Sure.
We're curious as hell. We've never heard you. You don't come down this way much for us to see a live show. We'd love to hear you sing.
Okay, I'll talk to Tommy about that, who produces these events for us.
That would be beautiful. Now, for your guest, I was going to ask two questions. One he had answered in the previous caller about the DNA, if any of that was done. What about carbon dating? Was any carbon dating done on these bones? And can you tell how old they are? Is there like a decade where you would find them? Or is it, stretched out over different time lengths? Could you tell this from carbon dating?
Well, we've actually traced them over 4,000 years. We know that they were found in some of the tombs of the old copper culture dating between 3500 BC and 1000 BC. They were found in the tombs of the Adena mound builders between 1000 BC and 300 AD. They're found in the tombs of the Hopewell culture, which persisted in the Ohio Valley and throughout the entire eastern part of the United States until 500 AD. And then they again were found in a significant number in the tombs of the Mississippian mound builders between 1000 AD all the way up to European contact when they were encountered by Caucasians. So in our book and in our research, we actually utilize hundreds of radiocarbon dates, including radiocarbon dates from specific sites and even tombs that the tall ones were found in.
Jason, with the investigations that are ongoing into these tall ones, could they have been even taller than the 7 to 8 feet? Could they have been 15 feet tall?
I have never found a credible anthropological or archaeological report which measures one of these skeletons reaching that height. But that being said, just because I'd make that statement, I would follow that up by saying that anything is possible. If there's one thing I've learned over the years, it is that anything is possible. So just because we have not found any validation for that here in the Ohio Valley does not mean that it doesn't exist for elsewhere. For example, there is a report from Mediterranean France from an excavation done in 1889 and 1890 in a Bronze Age burial mound, and the excavator measured the bones found in the mound and suggested a height of around 11 feet.
Jeez.
For the skeleton found in the mound. And what's very interesting about this discovery is that the excavator was Georges Vacher de Lepauge. And Lepauge was one of the architects of world eugenics, and he actually spoke at many eugenics conferences here in the United States with Elise Herlitzka, the giant's denier from the Smithsonian that I mentioned earlier in response to the caller.
They deny, but they've got these things in some box down there, I bet.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Next up, let's go to Trey in Tennessee, first-time caller. Hi, Trey. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. God bless you all. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
Whenever King David in the Bible killed Goliath, it's a legend that he took his skull back to the city of Jerusalem and buried it in a hill, that hill being called Golgotha, Goliath of Gath, where our blessed Lord and Savior was crucified. Now, is there any link between Native Americans burying bones of these giants in mounds, like King David put Goliath's head in this hill called, that he called Golgotha? And I'll let you go, and I'll listen to your reply. Thanks
okay.
a lot, God bless.
Go ahead, Jason.
Well, that's a very interesting story. I appreciate that. In terms of burial mounds, it's very important for us to put this into its proper archaeological context. Burial mounds are an ancient form of burial found throughout the world, and the oldest burial mound in North America was found at Lance L'Amour. That mound dates to sometime between 5700 and 7000 BC, which is long before the time of King David. So mound building as a practice goes back to the Neolithic in Europe and the Archaic period here in the United States. The oldest burial mounds in the South here in the United States have been dated to between 5000 BC and 3000 BC, which is also considerably older than the Amorite culture or Goliath. So I can't speak to the possibility that there's a connection there. Burial mounds are very old, and they're connected to an ancient cosmology, centered around the Axis Mundi or World Tree. So I don't see any connections myself.
Jason, since you've been doing this, how many years now have you been at this?
Well, this year marks 8.5 years into the research project specifically, but I've personally been studying this sort of material, various subjects related to it, including geopolitics and secret societies and things like that, really since I was a teenager, so most of my life, actually.
What drives you?
What drives me is the fact that I believe that we are living in an age of total obfuscation, George. It seems that everywhere we turn, we see some veil that's being drawn over something that should be very important to us. We see our economic system occupied. We have our healthcare system occupied. And also our ancient history is occupied. And I truly believe that if we can provide people with a more clear view of reality, that it may affect their decisions and help to improve our lot on this planet.
All right, let's take another quick call from Joe in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Greetings, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Hey, I was hoping to get your opinion, expertise on the thought that these giants could have possibly helped build the pyramids. I've always thought to myself, those heavy blocks. Now, what if these giants could be possibly involved in the process of building some of the pyramids out there?
Okay, well, the Tall Ones in North America, the oldest instance of very large skeletal remains that we have been able to connect with an archaeological site that we can date is around 3,500 BC. That's considerably older than many of the ancient cultures in the old world that built sites like the Great Pyramids. However, I would point out that Flinders Petrie, who was the archaeologist who really developed the chronology of ancient Egypt, believed that the Egyptian civilization was originally the result of Mesopotamian colonists. And in his excavation reports, where he believed he found the remains of those colonists, he reported finding people very large. He filed those reports in the late 1800s. So it's possible that there were a group of very large people associated with the birth of the Egyptian civilization, although that really doesn't necessarily tell us that they specifically built the pyramids.
Can you imagine, Jason, an army of giants, a full, complicated army like that?
Well, you know, that's what the biblical scriptures talk about in the wars in ancient Canaan. It's a fascinating subject. And the Middle Bronze Age IV culture in the ancient East, which is the group of people that the Bible calls the Amorites, they've been found with copper and other types of metallic weaponry and artifacts, and it really is something that ignites the imagination.
Sure does. We're going to come back and take final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Jason Jurrell with us, his book, Ages of the Giants, and his website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. It's called paradigmcollision.com. How many episodes of Ancient Aliens have you been on, Jason?
Well, I've done one full segment here in Charleston at one of the large Adena burial mounds, and I've also filmed a lengthy interview with them that I believe has been used more than once. The filming process was actually pretty arduous. It was freezing outside. Covered in snow. We were there for like 11 hours.
Oh, my God. I taped mine in a couple hours in Los Angeles, and it's always 75 degrees.
Lucky you.
Yeah, absolutely. So what other researchers are working on this subject matter of these giants? So you're out there. How many others are out there?
Well, The field of giantology has been around for around 30 years now, I think. There have always been people like Steve Quayle,
mm-hmm.
I think, is one of the earlier researchers.
Yep.
The project that really inspired me was undertaken in the late 90s by Ross Hamilton and Vine Deloria Jr. And Vine was a Native American scholar and activist, and he believed in the Tall Ones. And Ross was the first writer who really published articles that showed actual excavation reports by professionals that recorded the Tall Ones. And that's what really inspired me to do my research. I would also point people to an excellent book by Dr. Greg Little called Path of Souls. That's one of my personal favorites on the Tall Ones and ancient Native American cosmology.
Next up, let's go back to the calls, Bob, Robbie in Marietta, Ohio. Hey, Rob, go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, I was wondering if you have looked at the placement of those and if there's a reason why they're placed where they are, of the mounds, that is.
The mounds were selected in certain areas. I think they're like earth ley lines. What do you think, Jason?
Well, I know that the archaeologists have come around to this idea very cautiously. Some archaeologists believe that they were placed in the vicinity of large mountains because of their representation of the Axis Mundi. The Axis Mundi in cosmology and mythologies around the world, actually, represents a great mountain or pillar that joins together different realms. And some of the other sort of geographical features that we know the Adena constructed their mounds nearby are river valleys, high places overlooking river valleys, different areas like that. They're oftentimes found near natural springs because in native cosmologies, the natural springs are sometimes seen as gateways to other realms of the underworld. So there certainly is a pattern and a method to the selection of a ritual landscape.
We have Jimmy in Sioux Falls, South Dakota now. Welcome to the program, Jimmy.
Good morning, George and Jason. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Good. I love your show, George, because I try and listen to it all the time, but I'm a newspaper carrier at night, and so I kind of go in and out, and I can't catch you all the time.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, I've got two questions for Jason tonight.
Okay.
Or this morning. One, Jason, how did anthropologists know where to dig for these findings, and how do they get to them? And my second question is, what is the method of getting findings of Native American bodies or skeletons? If they are on sacred ground, how do they go about getting them and getting to them,
All right, both good questions. First of all, how do archaeologists know where in the heck to start digging, Jason?
No one knows where to start digging.
You just dig.
An archaeological site can be which could have remains of the Tall Ones. Like I said, it could span several cultures spanning thousands of years. Any one of those sites could contain the bones of a person with this unique physical anthropology. It's completely random, and it actually gets back to something you and I discussed earlier, George, about the social standing of these people.
Yeah.
Since they are not always elites or something like that, no one can then decide, well, we're going to find the central tomb in this burial ground or burial mound, and maybe there will be a large skeleton. So it's kind of a game of roulette, and my job as a researcher is to scour thousands of pages of literature in search of credible instances when they are found. Now, with regards to Native American bones, it is one of the greatest atrocities of American history that we have, in many ways, turned looting the tombs of Native American ancestors into an industry that we call archaeology. There are several burial laws in effect, and every state has its own burial laws, some of which are better than others and some of which are fairly ineffective to stop the desecration of the ancient graves. But again, that's something that varies from one state to another.
Do you think every mound throughout the North America might have these bodies and these skeletons in there?
No. The Tall Ones were a distinct subpopulation that existed alongside the rest of the prehistoric Native Americans. So, you know, just finding a burial mound that is an Adena or Hopewell burial mound by no means means that there must be a very large skeleton in that mound. In fact, the overwhelming majority of mounds after around 300 AD contain normal-sized individuals. Now, these cultures did not always bury their dead in mounds. If you were to go to Tennessee to a place like Nashville or Memphis, you may not realize that when you walk down the street, under the pavement are thousands of stone tombs that were simply built underground by the Mississippian culture, and many large skeletons were exhumed from those tombs when the cities were built, for example.
Let's go next to Taryn in Long Beach, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Taryn. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. This topic is fascinating.
Thank
and
you.
I had a question related to Hancock's work, and I feel like the people that he's researched that came out like 20,000 years ago from the megalithic sites
mm-hmm.
are possibly these Tall Ones, and then they merged into the cultures that were actually on the lands that they arrived. And I was just wondering if you had looked at Graham Hancock's work and seen any correlation to your work.
Jason, I'm sure you're aware of Graham Hancock, right?
I know who Graham Hancock is. I've actually presented in Ohio at a conference that he also presented at. And I think that when it comes to this subject of the extinctions and impacts and everything that happened in ancient history, the key to that is really going to be in the radiocarbon dating record. And thus far, we know that Native Americans were here by at least 14,000 years ago. And those Native Americans who were here during that time period are biologically related to the Native Americans who are still here, which means there was continuity in the populations. But whether or not the Tall Ones blended their cultures with other people, it's entirely possible. These cultures were all polythetic, and polythetic cultures have a way of expanding by acculturation or other people picking up some elements, but perhaps not all elements. So that's kind of the rule that we see for thousands of years of history. And this is another one of those subjects where I encourage people to do their own research and compare the details and see if maybe they have something new to add.
Let's go to Chillicothe, Ohio. Paul's with us now. Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
My grandmother is three-quarters Shawnee and very tall lady, probably 6'4", 6'5".
That's pretty good height.
A lot of my relatives are over, 90% of everybody in my family is like over 6 foot at maturity. I was wondering if this would be in the genetic code, if we should like get our DNA tested or whatever. Thank you.
Interesting take on that. What do you think, Jace?
If the family is Shawnee, then I can guarantee you that the Tall Ones are in the ancestry, yes. The Shawnee and many other tribes related to them are descended down from the Tall Ones.
God, can you imagine putting together a basketball team with them if they were still around today?
It would be invincible.
Oh, it really would be. I mean, truly remarkable.
Well, there's a young man named Brave Williams who's descended from the Iroquois, who is over 7 feet tall, and I think he's 18 years old, and they're already saying that he'll probably be a star basketball player.
And these Tall Ones, were they proportioned properly too?
Absolutely. The book Mounds for the Dead that was published in 1963 by the archaeologist Don Dragoo has a lengthy section on the anthropology of these people, and he talks about how they were powerfully built and had wonderful musculature. This was not a case of giantism or some disease. This is a natural genetic feature of certain lineages.
Let's go to David, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, one of our favorite spots. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hello. How are you, sir?
Okay, Davey. Good.
Yeah, I heard you mention about Don Dragoon there, you know, from Pittsburgh here.
Oh, sure.
I knew him years and years and years ago and specialized in areas. The area around here in Washington County and everything else, I think you can find a lot of the areas of the mounds that contain bodies that were 7 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I specialized in what I found was the Monyok Indian. You know, the average height was about 5'9" for a man, but they extended on back throughout, you know, 1,000 years ago. And my observation here, when you excavated, the ground here is very acid. I'd say bone structure after 2,000 years is no longer in existence. And I'd say the mound builders didn't build large mounds in the Pennsylvania area here. They built smaller mounds together in a cluster. And the overgrowth of trees and everything else would go down through them. So you wouldn't find too much. What I have found is the remnants of the tools that they used, the let's see, what would it be, the banner stones or axle that was connected to spears for stone throwers and everything else. I found those in numbers and other larger points that would show that they hunted larger animals going back, 3,000 or 4,000 years ago in the woodland areas here. But I would say the bodies now have been broken by tree overgrowth through the mounds and the bones exposed to the acidic soil here because it's been coal mined and everything else throughout the area. But you don't find too many, but I would say Washington County near me still has great abundance of mounds that you probably could find the larger skeletal remains if you did. Dig again. They did during the Depression, and Don Dragoo was involved with that, I believe, that they opened up mounds that were Adena and Hopewell, and they found the larger skeletons, but they closed them back up again.
They closed it? Really? What do you think of that, Jason?
I have a whole chapter in our book on Pennsylvania and the giants from the Adena Mounds on record from Pennsylvania. The McKees Rocks Mound that was excavated in 1896 yielded skeletons, some of which were between 6'2 and 7 feet. The Pollux Hill Mound near, I think it's called Elyria in Pennsylvania. The Pollux Hill Mound was an Adena stone mound excavated in 1932 by George Fisher, and there was a 7'5" skeleton found in that mound. There are actually a lot of mounds from Pennsylvania in our book, so the tall ones were definitely a part of the Adena culture in Pennsylvania.
How big were their feet? You know, if a normal person is, you know, wears a size 9 shoe, let's say, how big do you think their feet were?
Wow, I really have no idea, but I would imagine it's fairly large.
Not me too. And the skull was what, pretty good size too?
Well, the cranial indexes for the Adena skull show us that all these people were, I think that William S. Webb wrote that they were big-headed people. They actually practiced artificial cranial deformation through flattening of the back of the skull, which actually made their skulls have a much higher vaulted appearance than would have been normal. Their lower jaw bones were massive. And I think that there's probably some truth to the old accounts of people, you know, you hear about people digging them up on their farms and placing the jaws over their face. So, yeah, they had a very powerful appearance.
Amazing. Jason, I want to thank you for being on the program. Give out your website, if you would, please.
It's www.paradigmcollision.com.
All right. And the book, Ages of the Giants, available all over the place?
Right now it's available on lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. And soon it will be available through other outlets as well.
Super. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate you being on the program. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.